We are involved in a very short study about the family of Jesus. This class only has four different class periods in it. We had our Kickstart Your Summer series to begin the summer, and so we are finishing it out with just a four lesson series on family members of Jesus. And I hope you've enjoyed the first couple. We studied about Mary in our first class. We talked about Joseph last week. And tonight we are going to be talking about Jesus' brothers and sisters. And you may think, boy, we don't know a whole lot about them. We actually know probably more than you would expect that we do know about them if you take everything and just start researching and digging in and pulling it all together. And so I want to share with you some things tonight that I hope will be beneficial. I hope you will see some things that we can learn from, that we can benefit from as we talk about his brothers and sisters. So I want you to get your Bibles. We're going to look in Matthew 13 to start with. Then we're going to jump to Mark chapter 6. Then we'll be over in John chapter 7. We'll be at a variety of other places in between, but those will be the main texts that we're in tonight. So, Matthew chapter 13. We started off talking about Mary and her identity and Joseph and his identity. So I figured we need to talk about the brothers, sisters of Jesus. What's their identity? In relationship to Jesus, what is their identity? So Matthew chapter 13, the closing verses of this chapter, we read about Jesus' family members. And before we look at those, you know where they were from. You know where Mary and Joseph lived before they went down to Bethlehem to register and pay their taxes. They lived in Nazareth, and then they fled down to Egypt to escape Herod the Great. And then after the danger was over, they came back to Palestine and settled back up in Galilee, living in the city of Nazareth. So that's where Jesus was raised, and that was the hometown for all of Jesus's family, for all of his brothers and sisters. So when you think about it, you know, the statement is made, can anything good come out of Nazareth? Well, we got a lot of good. I mean, I know that was the reputation that the city had back then, but we've got a lot of good coming out of Nazareth. But that's where this family, that's where this family is from. But when you get to Matthew chapter 13, you're reading about Joseph and Mary. You read in verse 53, came to pass when Jesus had finished these parables, he departed from there. Verse 54, when he had come to his own country, he taught them in their synagogue, so that they were astonished and said, where did this man get this wisdom and these mighty works? Is this not the carpenter's son, Joseph? Is not his mother called Mary? So there's his dad, there's his mom. And what about his brothers, James, Joses, or your Bible might have Joseph, Simon, and Judas, and his sisters? Are they not all with us? Where then did this man get all of these things? So Jesus had at least six siblings. How many of you had six siblings? Looking, Jimmy? You had nine? Okay. John's got nine. Jimmy, can you beat nine? Jimmy, just say it. I can't read sign language. Okay, never mind. All right. So Jimmy had 23. All right. Jimmy wins, John. We'll just let him win. Jermaine, did you have 23? 22? Are you kidding? Okay. All right. So we'll let you guys talk afterwards. So, all right. So here's a guy. Here's Jesus, grows up with six siblings. And let me say it this way, at least six siblings. Because we've got four brothers named, doesn't mean that there wasn't another one somewhere in there. And sisters is plural here, so we know that it's not one, it's more than one. So it could be two, could be three. Jimmy, it could have been 23 sisters. And if Jesus had 23 sisters, I feel for him. So here's a man who grows up in a large family, at least what we would consider, by my standards, I'll say it that way, he grows up in a large family. So when you think about Jesus' brothers and sisters, they would have grown up in the same environment that Jesus grew up in. If Joseph and Mary We're reading Bible stories to Jesus and teaching him Old Testament stories, teaching him about the Old Testament law. And if they were instilling all of this faith in the heart of Jesus, do you think they skipped over their other kids? I mean, maybe they put all of their efforts into their first kid and neglected the rest of them, but I doubt it. So if they're focused on instilling that in Jesus, all of these kids grow up in that environment. At least that's my estimation of it. In Luke chapter 4, the Bible says that Jesus came to the synagogue as was his custom, verse 16. Where did he get that custom? He grew up going to the synagogue. Well, guess what his brothers and sisters grew up doing then? They grew up going to the synagogue. Luke chapter 2, verse 41 says, every year Joseph and Mary went to Jerusalem for Passover. Well, if they took Jesus when he was 12 years old, guess who else must have been on this? I mean, did they leave everybody else at home? I don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us. Were his brothers and sisters on this trip with him? And if they were, did they realize that Jesus wasn't with them, but they didn't say anything? I mean, there's all sorts of questions that start coming to your mind. We don't know, all right? But if they're taking these trips to Jerusalem every year, and if they take Jesus, then the other brothers and sisters are going down there as well. What trade did Joseph raise Jesus to? All right. So what do you think the other brothers were raised? Dirk's like, yes, sir, raised to be a carpenter. So we mentioned last week when we were talking about Joseph being a carpenter, that Jesus was raised to be a carpenter. And the Jewish rabbis back then, they taught that if you don't raise your son with a particular trade, you're raising him to be a robber. Well, do you think he raised his other sons? I mean, Dirk, wouldn't it be great to have five sons? Well, careful. Darren's going to turn around and look at you to see how you're going to answer. But what if you had five sons to help you out on the work site? So perhaps, you know, the other sons are being trained as carpenters as well. But look in John chapter 2, just for a second. Hold your finger here, Matthew 13. Actually, you can probably lose your finger there. We're going to jump over to Mark 3 in just a second here. But in John chapter 2, what's the first miracle that's recorded in the book of John? Turning the water to wine in Luke chapter 2. Luke chapter 2 and verse 11 says that this beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee. Now, who convinced him? Who told him to do this, basically? His mom. Right? His mom said, they need some help. I want you to help them. But maybe you didn't know this. He does the miracle there. He turns the water to wine. Maybe you don't know verse 12 is there. After this, he went down to Capernaum. He, his mother, his brothers, and his disciples, and they did not stay there many days. Who else is at the wedding feast? Who else likely, again, we're not told every detail here, but who else likely is a witness of the miracle? Verse 12 says the brothers went with him from Cana to Capernaum. Now, maybe they were skipping out on the wedding, all right? Maybe they were like, thanks, but no thanks, all right? Maybe they're a typical guy who are like, yeah, you can go to the wedding and I'll go fishing. But if they didn't see it, they at least heard about it, don't you suppose? Don't you think if they didn't see it, that mom would have told them about it on the walk from Cana to Capernaum? So you've got, and all I'm trying to do is just put within us a context of Jesus. So we think about Jesus being raised by Joseph and Mary, but there's a whole family here. He's got brothers and sisters. You think Jesus felt any obligation as an older brother to look out for his younger siblings? Grayson, do you think your sisters ever felt an obligation to look out for you? I'll shake your head for you. I never felt my sisters felt an obligation to look out for me. But that's not fair. I talk about my sisters and they're not here. I'd talk about them if they were here. Just think about that family dynamic. We don't have information about it, okay? So we are just trying to piece together some things that we have, but there's at least seven kids in this family. And yet, while they're all raised the same, while they're all raised in the same home, part of my point in looking at their identity with Jesus is to make the transition to say, okay, but now we read about them not believing in Jesus. How could individual, and if they were there in John chapter 2 and saw that first miracle that he did in Cana, how could they not believe in him? How could his brothers not believe in him? Okay, all right, so you're still in Matthew chapter 13, right? Jesus made some general statements, and John's mentioning one of them here, that Jesus says, John chapter 2 says he came unto his own, and his own received him not. But look in Matthew chapter 13, look in verse 57. Jesus says in Matthew 13, verse 57, a prophet is not without honor, except where? In his own country. Did you know the rest of the verses there? Sometimes we only quote that part and we don't quote the rest of the verse. Prophet's not without honor, except a prophet is respected everywhere else, except in his own country, in his own hometown. Did that prove true with Jesus? Was he respected in Nazareth? No. That's what we're reading about here in Matthew 13. But he's not respected where else? In his own house. Now, Jesus is making that as a general statement regarding all prophets, but do you think it applied to Jesus? Did Jesus receive honor, respect, belief from his own brothers? No, he didn't. So what he's saying here, obviously the in his own country applies to him, but even in his own house applies to him. If you were to back up to Matthew chapter 10, and see the warning that Jesus is giving to his followers, telling them that those who follow him, that I've come to set a man against his father, verse 35, a daughter against his mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. Verse 36 says, and a man's enemies will be those of his own household. Again, Jesus is talking about general principles here. He's talking about division that's going to come about in a household where some people choose to follow Christ and some don't. But did Jesus know anything about that? Did he know about having your own enemies in your own household? Yeah. So when Jesus is talking about these things, these aren't some kind of foreign concepts to him. This is very real to him. So during his life, during his ministry, his own brothers don't believe in him. Why not? You think jealousy? You think that's a real... The New Testament doesn't detail it all out for us, but you think they were jealous? I mean, seriously, your brother is the Son of God, and you're not. Jealousy? Why would they not believe in him? Anybody else? Darren? Okay. Yep. So... Darren says, by his very nature, he was different from all of the other kids, so that makes him stand out. Absolutely. Eva? All right. They probably thought he was a lunatic. If your brother ran around saying that he was the Son of God, what would you have thought? Would you have thought, oh, sure, you're the Son of God? Or would you think he was crazy? So there's all sorts of, you know, were they suspicious of him? There's all sorts, but we're not given an exact reason as we read through this, but we're told he didn't believe. Now, look at Mark chapter 3. And when you're Mark chapter 3, I'm not going to say 100% that the verses we're going to look at here are talking about his brothers. My opinion is that it is. But there could be another view here, and I'll mention what that is. But I think it's talking about his brothers. Maybe it's not. But look at Mark chapter 3. Who does Jesus select? Maybe you've got a little paragraph heading above verse 13. Who does Jesus select starting in verse 13 and 14? All right, 12 apostles. Verse 14, he appointed 12. So he called to him those that he wanted in verse 13. He appoints the 12 apostles. They are named here. By the way, when we were reading the names of Jesus' brothers, he had a brother named Simon. He had an apostle named Simon. He had a brother named Judas. He had an apostle named Judas. He had a brother named James. He had an apostle named James. Now, these are very common names, obviously, in that day. And so he names his disciples. He names his apostles. The end of verse 19 says what? He names them, and then they went into a house. So he pulls together these 12 guys. They go into a house. Verse 20 says, then the multitude came. And they came together so that they could not so much as eat bread. Verse 21 is the verse I want you to look at. The New King James says, but when his own people heard about this. Now, your Bible may not say his own people. If you've got the King James, I think King James says his friends. So his friends heard about this, King James. New King James, his own people heard about this. If you've got, is it the ESV? Says his family heard about this. And the reason that there are a variety of translations there is that this is not the regular word for family. It's not the regular word for friends. It's actually a combination of three Greek words, and that makes it a little more complex by its very nature. But it's a term that literally means not family necessarily, not friends, but literally means those from his side. Those from his side. Well, who is that? Who is it that's from his side? It's not the apostles, because they're already in the house. And so it is described as his own people. They heard about it. Maybe the friends. I think that the context lends itself more to his family, and particularly his brothers. And you say, well, why is that? Verse 21 says, when his people, or when his family heard about this, they did what? What's the verb? They went out. So they went out with a purpose, all right? And I'm going to come back and look at the purpose in just a second. But his own family hears about this. What did they hear? Did they hear that that he named his apostles? Did they hear that he went into a house? Probably he's talking about verse 20. That they heard that the multitude had come together so much that they couldn't even eat. That the multitude was so thick that they couldn't even get food to eat. And so when they heard this, they went out to go to him. Now, look in verse 31. I didn't look at all the translations, so I cannot remember. The New King James, the first word is the word then. Anybody else have the word then in your Bible, the first word in verse 31? So, in verse 21, it says, when they heard this, they went out. Verse 31 says, then his brothers and his mother came. I tie verse 21 and verse 31 together because it says, they went out to go to him, and verse 31 says, then they came. When, then, went out, came. I tie that context together. I don't believe this is talking about two separate events, not when you've got the when and the then. I think it's talking about the same exact event, same exact time frame. And so what's verse 31 talking about? Then his brothers and his mother came, and standing outside, they sent to him, calling him. And we're going to look at some of those verses next week. We don't have time to get into all of the verses that follow verse 31. But because of the went out in verse 21 and then they came, I think you're seeing a travel here that they're leaving one place in verse 21 and now they're arriving where Jesus is in verse 31. Now, if that's the case, if this is talking about his family, what does verse 21 tell us that they went out to do? They went out to seize him. Think about how descriptive that is. They went out to seize him. They went out, the New King James says, they went out to lay hold of him. Why were they doing that? Were they going out there because they had a delivery dudes, you know, they had brought some Chick-fil-A for him. Why did they go out there? For they said, he is out of his mind. What are they going out there to do? They're going out there to seize their brother, and if it's his brothers, they're going out there to seize his brother. For the word said, maybe you have the word saying, and it's in the Greek imperfect tense, which means they were continually saying this. So it's not a one time. It's not that they said it one time. It is that they were going out to grab him, and don't pay attention. He's out of his mind. I'm sorry. He's crazy. He's beside himself. He's out of his mind. He's out of his wits. Do you have any family members don't admit it. Just do you have any family members that you've done that? Or maybe you've thought about doing that? They're out of their mind. So somebody said it. This family thought he was a lunatic. Thought he was crazy. And so they go out there to grab a hold of him. Here's the question. Why did they do it? We don't know. Dirk? Okay. Okay, good point. So, last thing on the screen. Was Mary among them in verse 21? Did Mary have a full understanding of Jesus and his mission? Luke chapter 2, when he's 12 years old. Why have you done this to us? Do you not know that we have sought you anxiously? Did she have a complete understanding? In John chapter 2, when she tells Jesus to do this miracle, and what does he say to her? Woman, my time hasn't come yet. So does she have pieces? Does she have parts? Sure. Does she have a full, complete grasp of who Jesus is? I'm not sure that she, because what's going on now? Does she know that she was a virgin when she gave birth to this child? Well, yeah. So that's going to stick with you. But God in a human body? That's okay. God in a human body? So there's a lot of processing there. Now, here's the other part of this. Could Mary have been concerned about Jesus' welfare? Here's this multitude that has surrounded the house so much so that he's not able to eat. If your child was not able to eat, would Mama Bear kick in? Would your Mama Bear instincts kick in and say, they're not even letting food into my son. We're going to fix this. Or if you put this in Dirk, I'm not fighting for this. I'm just giving you some possibilities here, okay? So put this in context. Mary's cousin is named Elizabeth. Elizabeth had a son named John the Baptist. At this time, guess where John is? He's in prison. He's in prison because of what he's been preaching. Now there's a multitude that has surrounded this house where her son is. Is it possible that Mama Bear instincts kick in and she's thinking, John is in prison. Guess what they're going to do to my son? I'm not saying for sure that Mary's even a part of this. Could it be that the brothers are the ones who are going out there saying he's out of his mind, and Mary's just following them to make sure that they don't hurt their brother? I don't know. And again, verse 21 may not be the family. But in the context, it seems that verse 31 is a continuation of verse 21. And again, whether it is or it isn't, if it's the family, what would their motivation, what's motivating them here? Why are they going to say he's out of his mind? Could they be there trying to protect Jesus? Could they be there? Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Could they be there to try to rescue him? And just kind of try to get him out of the house, maybe. Were they concerned that he didn't have anything to eat? based upon verse 20, perhaps. Did they think that maybe he really was crazy? I mean, what guy leaves the security of his home with his mom and goes out and lives in a way where he doesn't even have a place to lay his head? What kind of guy does that? What kind of person puts themselves out there into the hands of the Jewish mob and isn't concerned about it? What kind of guy surrounds himself by some uneducated, untrained men as his closest friends? What's wrong with this guy? All sorts of things could have been going on with them. But I don't know if this is talking about his family. But if it's talking about his brothers, what did his brothers think? His brothers thought, he's out of his mind. He's crazy. Now, go to John chapter 7. John chapter 7 is even more clear. This is talking about his brothers. So if Mark chapter 3 isn't his brothers, John chapter 7 is. John chapter 7 tells us that Jesus was working in Galilee, preaching up in Galilee. He did not want to go down to Judea. Why? What was the reason, according to verse 1? Because the Jews were trying to kill him. If you knew that somebody was trying to kill you, would you go and see them? Would you go in their neighborhood? No, you'd avoid them. Now, did Jesus know that eventually he was going to be killed? Yes, but he knew what that time frame was, and he wasn't ready to speed up or preempt that time frame. And so he's staying up in Galilee. And so the Feast of Tabernacles, which is around on our calendar, around October time of year, it's in the what would be considered the autumn, the fall time of year, was at hand. I'll mention that in just a minute. Verse 3, his brothers therefore said to him, depart from here and go into Judea, that your disciples also may see the works that you are doing. For no one does anything in secret while he himself seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world. What are they saying? You are, look at the words, in secret. In their accusation, maybe accusation's too strong. In their words here in verse 4, they're saying, here you are up in Galilee and you're operating in secret. But what you should want is to be known openly. Isn't that what you want? To be they're surmising here. Shouldn't you want to be known openly? And if you want to be known openly, you're a long way from the place where that is, because that's down in Jerusalem, down in the Mecca, down in the center of Jewish life. And so that's where you ought to be. What's their motive in saying this to him? I mean, you've got to read in a little bit here. It's not reading as much as we did in the other text, but you've got to read. What's their motivation? Could it have been a pure motivation? Could it have been, you know what, if you'll go down there and do those miracles, then, you know, you will have proven yourself to us and we will believe you. Could that have been the motivation? Could have been. We look at it and we say, oh, I'm not sure that that was. But could it have been, you know, we're trying to really believe in you and we want to see if you'll do this. Could it have been that they were back in chapter 6, so just one chapter back in chapter 6 and verse 15 is where the mob had tried to take him by force and to make him king. So maybe they thought, hey, maybe they will make him king. And if he's king, we're his brothers. That makes us royalty. And I don't know. Maybe they were seeing some of that. Maybe they were probably closer to this. Maybe they were taunting him. Maybe they were mocking him a little bit. This is in verses 3 and 4, just 7 verses earlier, back in chapter 6 and verse 66, is where it said many of his disciples went back and walked with him no more. Maybe those are the disciples they're talking about in verse 3. Maybe they're saying, hey, if you go back down there and do your miracles, maybe you'll win your disciples back. Maybe they're kind of taunting him with that. Or, as John kind of alluded to, maybe it's kind of a sinister, hateful scheme. If Jesus knew the mob wanted to kill him, could they have known the mob wanted to kill him? And could they be saying, hey, why don't you go down there? where they want to kill you. I don't know. We don't know, John.
I'm not saying it is.
Well, right. We are surmising that there's some kind of jealousy here. And as you read in the context, it does not appear to be some kind of a pure motivation. It seems to be that they are sticking it to him. And one of the reasons for that is the first word of verse 5. First word of verse 5 is "for." Why were they saying this? You know, they're saying this because even his brothers did not believe in him. Of all the people, not even his brothers didn't believe in him. So they're trying to egg him on a little bit. It's reminiscent to what they're saying to him, to me, is reminiscent of what the devil said to him in Matthew chapter 4. Took him up on the pinnacle of the temple. "If you are the Son of God, cast yourself off of here. Prove it to everybody." And to me, that's almost what they're trying to, just go ahead and prove it. So here's those people who are closest to him. Do you think that hurt Jesus? Do you think that hurt? My flesh and blood. My brothers don't believe me. Dirk? Well, he's talking about it. When you get into verse 6, 7, and 8, and then in verse 9, Jesus is trying to tell them, you know, I have things working on a particular calendar that I am working towards a particular end. And, you know, so my time has not yet come. And ultimately it will. And we learn that ultimately he does go down to Judea, but he does not go openly, as they would suggest, but goes down there more privately. But he says, when he says, "But your time is always ready," you can go there anytime. You can go down there anytime that you want, because nothing's going to happen to you. But I'm trying to time this in such a way that things work out in a timely manner, as I would have them to do. And so he says, "World can't hate you, but it hates me. So you can go there anytime, because they don't hate you the way that they hate me." And so that's his focus there. By the way, when you read the word "brothers" in verse 5, even his brothers did not believe in him. The word "brothers" that's used there, the term that's used there, the plural form of it, is a word that can include sisters. It's the word that is used in the New Testament for brethren. When you read the word "brethren" in the New Testament, is it always just talking about the brothers in Christ? No, brethren is talking about the church. Is talking, right? Brethren is the men and the women. It's a generic term that includes the men and the women. So that's the term that's here. I'm not saying it does, but I'm saying it could include his sisters. And so it could be all of his siblings that don't believe him. But let me get to this last. I've got to get to this last, because this is the whole point of this lesson. The whole point of this lesson is not just his identity, their identity with Jesus and their unbelief in Jesus, but their conversion. So after all of this, after all of the 33 years of not believing in him, after all the 3.5 years of his ministry of not believing in him, something changes. Something changes. Now, John chapter 7, where we are. Remember I told you it's October, the autumn of the year? Less than 6 months later is when he's crucified. This is less than 6 months from when he's crucified and buried and raised from the dead. So we're talking 6 months after John chapter 7. Jesus dies, is buried, is raised from the dead, and he ascends back into heaven. Now, look in Acts chapter 1 really quick. We got 3 minutes to do this. Flip over there. Acts chapter 1, Jesus ascends into heaven in verses 9, 10, and 11. Then the disciples go back to the upper room and gather in verse 12. And it tells us they were all with one accord there in the temple, in the upper room, with his mother, verse 14, and his brothers. By the way, that word "brothers," same word, could include his sisters too. So we're not excluding them. The term could include his sisters. So his brethren are there. Something's changed. Why are they there with the disciples? What has transpired in between John chapter 7 and Acts chapter 1 that all of a sudden his brothers are gathering with the disciples? Well, 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 7 is where Paul lists all of these people that Jesus appeared to after his resurrection. He was seen by. Verse 7 says he was seen also by James. Not James the apostle, not James son of Zebedee, not James of son of Alphaeus, James his brother. If you knew that your brother was dead and then you saw him alive again, would you change your opinion? If you didn't believe in him before, would you now believe that he is who he claimed to be? And we don't have time to get into it, but if you talk about what are some of the strongest evidences for the resurrection of Jesus, one of the top four strongest evidences for the resurrection of Jesus is the conversion of his brother James. The conversion of any of his brothers, but the conversion of his brother James, because we've got information about this. Jesus appeared to him in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 7, and then we've got all of these other details about James in the New Testament. We learned that in Galatians chapter 1, that after Paul was converted, that he went up to Jerusalem for 15 days, and while he was in Jerusalem, he saw the James, and he identifies him in Galatians 1 and verse 19, James, the Lord's brother. He doesn't leave it ambiguous for us. What James is he talking about? He says, I got to see James, the Lord's brother. Well, why is he seeing James, the Lord's brother? Because he's not an unbeliever anymore. He's now a Christian, and not just a Christian. He is a leader, an influential leader in the church. Acts chapter 12, when Peter gets out of prison and goes to Mary's house, he says, go and tell James and the brethren, the elders, that I've been freed from prison. Go and tell James. It's not James the apostle. He died at the beginning of the chapter. It's James, the brother of Jesus. Influence in Acts chapter 15, when you got the Jerusalem council talking about circumcision and whether the Gentiles need to be circumcised, the longest speech that was given, that's recorded in Acts 15, was given by James, the brother of Jesus. So he becomes a very influential leader in the church in Jerusalem. Paul calls him one of the pillars of the church in Jerusalem. He wrote the book of James that we have in our Bible, and then he's recorded in history as being a devout man. As he's called the just with a capital J, with a lot of great things said about him. But not just James, you got his other brother Judas or Jude, who wrote the book of Jude. And so we have this major transition that goes from his brothers perhaps being the ones that saying, oh, he's out of his mind, he's crazy. For sure, his brother saying, hey, why don't you go down to Jerusalem, buddy? Because they don't believe that he's the Son of God. To the point that they become Christians, not just Sunday morning only Christians. They become devout followers, disciples, who are leaders in the church, writing New Testament books. What made the difference? What made the difference? The resurrection of Jesus is the only answer. The fact that Jesus was raised from the dead changed their lives. Should that not teach us something? One, the validity of the resurrection of Christ. Two, if it changed their life, what about me? I mean, here's James. The early historians talked about how much he prayed, and it says his knees became like those of camels. That's how much he was down on his knees praying, worshiping God, and asking God to forgive the people. His knees became like camels. And historians say he died a martyr's death. Why would you die a martyr's death? Because he truly believed that his brother, Jesus, was the Son of God. And he knew that to be the case because he saw his brother raised from the dead. I don't know how much you thought there was in the New Testament about his brothers and sisters. Maybe you've learned some stuff, seen some stuff tonight that you didn't know before, and if that's the case, I'm thankful for that. But may God help us to not be like those stubborn guys before the resurrection. Let's be faithful like the ones after the resurrection. Thank you all very much for your good attention tonight.